A podcast of the cinema.
What's up?
So many things. First of all, you're Dave White.
Right.
And I'm Alonzo Duralde. I hate also when you true. Don't pick up that ball.
You know what? I forget.
Yeah.
I forget because I don't need to be introduced to you.
It's every day should feel like you're meeting me for the first time.
Like... stars coming out of your head. Oh, it's love.
Anyway, I'm film reviews editor for The Wrap and film critic and TV recapper at What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube. We just announced some very exciting news about our Patreon subscriptions.
Here's what you should do. Hang on, I'm going to interrupt you already.
Uh-huh.
Let's kind of... be very quick about this.
That was my plan.
And then when we do the second half episode, yes, where we talk about the terrible movies.
Yes. This would be quicker if you weren't interrupting me.
Right.
So what I was going to say was, go to patreon.com/linoleumknife, watch the YouTube video where
it's
we talk about all of our new and updated things for year two of this grand experiment.
A new video and new items and new... two new podcasts.
That's right. Two new podcasts for subscribers.
So much more content.
And a special charitable thing we're doing for people who subscribe for the first time this month. So anyway, it's all there on the Patreon account.
Right.
We're not going to talk about that now because we are super excited
to have
a guest. She is the co-host of IndieWire's Screen Talk podcast with Eric Cohn. But I'm just going to read this bio because it will floor you. Sorry about this. I apologize in advance. Born and raised in New York, Ann Thompson has been a contributor to the New York Times, Washington Post, The Observer, and Wired. She has served as film columnist at Variety and deputy editor of Variety.com, where her daily blog, Thompson on Hollywood, launched in March 2007. It now lives on IndieWire. Ann was the deputy film editor at The Hollywood Reporter, the West Coast editor of Premiere, a senior writer at Entertainment Weekly, and West Coast editor for Film Comment. She wrote the film industry column Risky Business for LA Weekly and the LA Times Syndicate, a graduate of the Department of Cinema Studies at NYU. She has taught film criticism at USC and hosts the fall semester of sneak previews for UCLA Extension. Ann Thompson is here.
I'm just old.
I'm leaving.
We are officially outclassed.
You're better than us.
No. I have to say, I am so happy to be in this apartment. You guys have a really cool apartment.
Well, thank you.
I've been listening to you
That's
for a really
true.
Long
really
time.
Do.
But and I knew when I came in that you'd probably been here for a while. How long have you lived here?
Close to 18 years.
Yes.
So I'm staring at the bookcase, which is very meticulously organized. I see Rumi. I see Jonathan Franzen. I see David Foster Wallace. I see J.M. Ketsey. You know, I mean, these are smart guys. These are well-read guys. And in the bathroom, a biography of Howard Kurt, the great Mad
of Harvey
Max
Kurtzman,
Harvey
yeah.
Kurtzman.
Well, then, see, we very strategically put the books to face the guests so that they'll be cowed by right. our
erudition.
Literary prowess. There you go.
It almost kind of backfired on us that one time.
Oh,
when that famous author came to dinner,
because he was scanning for his own stuff.
Oh, it wasn't there.
He was judging our books.
Yes,
like I could feel it. Like I could feel him looking at the books and being like, "Yeah, whatever, bougie middle brow."
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. David Foster Wallace, not a plus for him. I'll say that much. But
well, I also see John Waters, David Sedaris. There's the comedy section over here.
Well, Anne, we're so thrilled to have you here because I have been a huge fan of your work for ages. I remember when, like, you know, before box office coverage was ubiquitous, your annual recap of the year that had just happened in Film Comment was like something I looked forward to. It was my post-Christmas.
Back in the days of print, when you would labor over things far, far in advance. And it didn't matter if it was months, you know, it didn't matter if you were out of date back then.
That's true, yeah, because, you know, it wasn't this up-to-the-minute, now, constant thing. And also, you once gave me a lift to Park City from the Salt Lake City airport, and for that, you are, like, forever enshrined in my book of awesome people. So, welcome to the show. And speaking of Sundance, you just came back, and I skipped this year, so I want to hear all about it.
You missed the snow. It was snow dance.
I got all kinds of, so much. Instagram videos from Amy Nicholson about the snow.
Oh, yeah?
They were delightful.
That when Eric and I did the podcast, we were at the Kickstarter house, which for some reason was up in the hills.
Oh, great.
And it was the middle of the blizzard, and I had to climb these stairs, you know?
It's like going to Shangri-La, five levels.
And it was coming down, and you couldn't see anything, and you got to this road, and there was no road. You didn't know where you were. I looked like a mountain man, because I had my hat and my coat. You know,
there was one year that I went in the 90s where the local schools had a snow day. And I thought, oh,
that means it's bad.
Yeah. if it's a ski resort, you have a snow day, like that's.
Let's just say it took three grown men to dig out my car.
Oh, man.
Wow.
So I mentioned on the show, weirdly, they actually showed us stuff in advance this year. I don't know if you took advantage of that at all. But in the years that I've been doing this, usually it was like you see it at Sundance or never, or at least not beforehand.
What did you get to see?
I saw Dina, which I liked a lot, which the Orchard picked up.
Won an award.
Oh, yes, that's true, it did. I liked Give Me Future, the Major Lazer documentary about their performance in Havana, Cuba. And then I saw Crown Heights, which I didn't love, but it won the Audience Award.
And I didn't even see that one.
Yeah, it's one of those things where the actual story is, I'm sure, amazing. And it's, I think it's based on a This American Life piece about this guy who was wrongly accused of murder. And they got these witnesses to lie and say that they saw him there and blah, blah, blah. And he spent more than 20 years behind bars before they finally got the right lawyer and went through all the process and were able to get him out. And, you know, you feel for the guy. But the way that the story is told in the film, it's kind of like, you know that he's going to get out or there'd be no movie. You know, like kind of going into it, you ultimately figure out, all right, well, at some point they're going to exonerate him, they're going to clear this guy, or they wouldn't be telling this story. And the getting there is just not very interesting. Even though it stars Keith Stanfield, who I like a lot, who, you know, from Short Term 12.
Well, I'm going to have to check it out, because just by virtue of the fact that it won the Audience Award, yeah, something worked.
I guess.
For the people who saw it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it plays to I saw it in a little room at CAA with 12 people, or maybe that wasn't the way to do it, but, and I know I was, afterwards, I wasn't the only one kind of, you know, a colleague of mine and I sort of shot each other a look of like,
yeah.
So, you know, I admire what the movie wants to do, but I didn't think it was all that great. What did you like? What's exciting this year?
Well, going in, I had been really hyped up about The Big Sick. Mm-hmm. And so I had that attitude, all right, this is the big acquisitions title. That doesn't mean it's going to be good.
Right.
But it was really good.
Oh, good. Okay.
So it's my favorite of all of them. I mean, it's Judd Apatow producing. Michael Showalter did a really good job. It's a true story. It's authentic. Kumail Nanjiani and Emily Gordon wrote it about their own romance, cross-cultural romance. And then you have Zoe Kazan playing Emily.
Oh, wow.
And then the parents are played by Holly Hunter and Ray Romano. So it's funny.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Also, so you have...
I like that Holly Hunter.
You've got the comedy and this very dark, tough story as well. Because she gets very sick and she's in a coma.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That character. And so the whole thing comes together really well, and it was the big sale to Amazon, and they were only outbid by one movie at the very end with $12.5 million from Netflix for Mudbound, which is the
really
D-Reese,
okay. Oh, good for her.
Which was also a wonderful movie.
Oh, good.
A surprise. Good. I was going in again, low expectations.
Sure.
I liked Pariah, but it didn't show me what she could do, and I liked Bessie. But again, it didn't prepare me for the scale and scope of this one.
So this is like her coming into her own as a filmmaker?
It also shows what happens if you give a filmmaker resources.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
So many of these people are stuck in little tiny micro-budget land.
Mm.
And here you have post-World War II, Southern families, one white, one black, two veterans coming back from the war, one white, one black, bonding,
right.
And the whole thing plays out. And it's a great cast.
Oh, good. You know, I'd heard some really good things out of that screening, and then, but Steve Pond for the rap was not as high on it as other folks. So
it gets it's one of those movies where you don't know what your footing is going in, which isn't a bad thing. Mm. It means that it's not formulaic. It's sure. not like everything you've seen before. You don't know where it's going. I think that's okay.
I don't know which films won the jury prizes.
I did not see the one that won. I am not at home in this world anymore.
Right, which is a Netflix title that's like premiering soon. I think like in the next 2 months.
And I will
or
catch
something.
Up with it.
Yeah. But, Elijah Wood and, I love her, the actress from Heavenly Creatures.
Melanie Lynskey.
Melanie Lynskey.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So this is a case where one of the great luxuries I had this time, I did a lot of interviews on the phone and, you know, did sort of industry reporting kind of things, but I wasn't doing... I have to go to the suite and interview the star of such and such. I didn't
right.
do any of that.
Nice.
Which leaves you free to follow the buzz. Mm. You know, listen to people in your condo when they come back from a movie. And so I ended up seeing really good movies.
Oh, good.
That one didn't have a lot of buzz, so I didn't go to that one.
Okay. Well, you know, it's funny with Sundance. I remember, you know, I started going in 1995. And it was pretty different in terms of, you know, there was the one party every night at the ski lodge with like a wedding band playing, and everybody from like volunteers to movie stars were there because that was it. That was the thing that was happening. But I remember like when you'd get on the shuttle, there was always tons of conversation about what was good and what wasn't and what you should go
totally.
See.
Totally.
And then in the last couple of years, all I ever hear people talk about on the shuttle is what movie stars they saw somewhere. And it was kind of depressing. I'm like, where is everybody if they're not on the shuttle? Like, does everybody rent a car now? Like, where this conversation moved to?
Thanks to the snow, everyone was on the shuttle. Because
okay.
that was the only way you were going to get it. I had a couple of nights. I went to the HBO party. I did do that. And it was the night of the snowstorm. And I'm like sliding around on the road. Not good. Not yeah. good.
So now you and Eric talked about Oscar stuff already. I don't want to make you kind of repeat all that. You should totally go listen to Screen Talk. They've always got great stuff to talk about this sort of thing. But I've been kind of thinking bigger picture, and I think you're uniquely qualified to walk me through this. Who ultimately really benefits from the Oscars? I mean, because everybody sort of takes it as this object of faith that it's a good thing for somebody, that it's obviously it's making the studios money or it's helping out careers. But I feel like we always see examples where that isn't the case. And so I'm just wondering, is this an ego thing or is there really like a bottom line where people can point to a graph and say, no, this nomination made us this much money and this win made us this much?
Okay, so there's several different levels on which to parse that. So
okay.
is it a career thing for a director? I mean, Damien Chazelle won the DGA last night and mm-hmm. he's going to win the Oscar too and he's going to win
right.
Best Picture. And
yeah.
Emma Stone is probably going to win Best Actress and there are various people along the line, maybe the cinematography, you know, who are going to win and their careers are going to be boosted from this.
Right.
You know, for Ryan Gosling to get a second nomination, a huge deal. So, you know, he gets more cred
okay.
for that. Cred is what you get
gotcha.
More than, you know, and maybe a little bump in your salary. But if you, you know, to be Helen Mirren is a good thing, to be Meryl Streep, to be one of those people that is sort of guaranteed, you know,
right.
you know a perennial.
Sure.
Those are brand names. They
yeah.
sell, not only do they sell tickets all over the world, but they sell them in domestic art house theaters.
Right.
Yeah.
People go to see them. They're
yeah.
like it's a brand of quality.
But like Emma Stone is already on the rise, you know. And I mean, is winning an Oscar going to do more for her than being in Arrival and Nocturnal Animals and not getting an Oscar nomination is going to do for Amy Adams?
They're in different places. So Amy mm. Adams has been nominated 5 times.
Yes.
And it's really sort of shocking that she didn't get nominated for this one. It's because she did a movie star performance in a way, Arrival, mm. and because it was such a heated competition for that.
Yeah.
Best
yeah.
actress. We haven't seen one like that in a long time.
Yeah.
It had to be close.
Totally. Yeah.
You know,
Annette Bening
had to be in there too.
Yeah.
So she's a movie star now. She
mm.
carried Arrival.
Yeah.
This is for a woman to be Jennifer Lawrence or mm. Amy Adams is
yeah.
is a rare thing. Angelina Jolie.
Right.
They can open movies. They can draw people. That's a big deal.
Mm.
Emma Stone isn't quite there yet, but she's
oh.
going to get there.
Okay, and with
help from Oscar
and winning an Oscar puts her there. Okay, all right. That's a fair answer. Then I'll buy that because I know there's so much there's so much annual effort. I mean, I don't mean annual, but I mean year-round effort.
You're one of these skeptics who gets annoyed.
Yeah, Lonzo, you're one of these skeptics.
No, you do. You get annoyed. But, well, look, it goes on for a long time. And if you're not, I'm in the weeds. You know, I love it, and I get into it every year. But it, also, more topically, very recently, this Muslim ban has had an impact on Asghar Farhadi.
Absolutely.
And the movie The Salesman, which is doing really well at the box office.
Yeah, true, yes.
And these late arrivals, this weekend, I just edited the Tom Brueggemann box office this morning, and shockingly, Raoul Peck's I Am Not Your Negro is a huge success. So yeah. So these movies opened and did well.
And obviously Farhadi, a lot of his clout in the U.S. is because he did win the Oscar for A Separation.
So he's become a brand name in that world, too.
I don't know. I'm of two minds about it. I get why it works, and I see why the industry relies upon it. But at the same time, you know, you read those inside Oscar books, you know, and you find out how much sort of machinations and manipulations are involved with the studios. And you think about Roberto Benigni, you know, or Mercedes Rule or somebody, where it's like they flare hot and then they're gone, you know.
Or Cuba Gooding Jr. or someone.
For instance.
Yeah. But the other thing, I think, is that it's a marketing tool, and there are worthy movies that wouldn't get made or wouldn't get seen if this machine wasn't working. I understand your concerns, but
and
it
works.
And now Barry
Jenkins is going to have a next film.
Exactly.
I mean, is that the last...
Moonlight.
Absolutely. Is that the last thing that sort of keeps the adult drama, such as it is, alive at studios, is the hope of Academy Awards?
Well, it really isn't alive at the studios.
That's what I mean, such as it is.
What's going on? I mean, if you think, you look at Arrival, I mean, that was not a studio movie. It was picked up by a studio for $20 million, but they would never have developed it. They were the people, it was developed at a production company that's at a studio, but that its own studio didn't want to make it at Fox.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
21 Laps, Sean Levy's company.
Oh.
But in the end, they financed it overseas. Film Nation is behind, you know, I think Hidden Figures also. You know, there's not, you know, the studios get into it, but they don't put all their eggs in it at all anymore. They come in late.
And how is that, you know, you mentioned Film Nation. We've been sort of, you know, we'll be talking on our other show this week about The Space Between Us, which is rather a catastrophe. And we were kind of thinking, like, this is someone's idea of what an American movie is, who's not like an actual American filmmaker or moviegoer, you know?
Well, there are the hazards of the movies that are raised, you know, where you basically have these people who work at foreign sales companies. So I want an actor that plays in France, and an actor who plays in Germany, and an actor who plays in Japan, and we're going to put them in an action movie with no intelligence. Is that the kind of movie we're talking about?
It's in that neighborhood, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not the visit beautiful Abu Dhabi that you get at the end of, you know, whatever that last Fast and the Furious movie was, but it's close.
I skip the ones that look bad. I have that luxury.
Oh, lucky you.
I tend to skip a lot of January and February stuff now, just because I can. No one's forcing me to go. But when something smells like it might be completely bonkers, then I'll go. And that's The Space Between Us.
Yeah.
It's just nutty.
It's a worst of the year contender already.
Yeah.
If that is any appeal to you, you know.
But in the way that makes you want to tell people, oh, you really should go see this because it's cuckoo. Yeah.
You know what I'd like to ask you guys is why Split is doing so well?
Everyone hates women.
Thank you.
I say that with a question mark. Maybe that's why.
I mean, you know,
it's like the third weekend.
It's revolting.
Well,
it's
horror
you've
movies.
Seen it.
No,
okay.
I have no intention.
You don't need to.
I don't want to.
Yeah, I didn't see it either. Actually, I mean, horror movies traditionally, you know, this is the time of year where we get like a Paranormal Activity or something, like, because what's happening is the main stuff that's going out is all the awards movies that are finally making it out to the rest of the country. What's the perfect antithesis to that for somebody who wants to, like, not think about anything at all? It's like a horror movie. And that just happens to be, they really place that one well to be the sort of early in the year thing. And
But is Shyamalan back?
It would appear he is. I mean, if it's doing this well, then
so he's back in.
But qualitatively?
Well, no.
Okay.
I don't have a problem. I was saying this when we reviewed the movie a week or two ago. I don't have beef with him. Like, I'm not one of the people who's like, oh, he's terrible all the time.
He's terrible sometimes.
He's terrible sometimes. But this movie just feels kind of toxic to me. But people like seeing, you know, 19-year-old girls stripped and held in captivity, I suppose, because that's the film.
But there's a final girl, so there's the...
It has horror tropes. It has a final girl. But the movie doesn't care about the other girls who don't make it to the end. It just kind of disappear. And so that felt really ugly to me.
That is disturbing. That sounds like Donald Trump land or something.
You know, obviously it was made before, you know, he...
Yeah,
became the shitty emperor. Here you can delete that.
Yes,
his awfulness of Donald Trump. Now we're going to be able to see it in the culture and assign a name to it.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, Saturday Night Live is making up for everything.
Oh my God. Melissa McCarthy as Sean Spicer is the greatest thing ever.
That was
lifting that podium.
that was really an incredible bit.
Like the Baldwin-est Trump stuff is fine, it's good, but man, that was next level.
No, but Steve Bannon coming in.
Yes, as the shrouded figure of death.
Can I have my desk back? And then Donald sits at the mini desk.
With a toy. So you mentioned both The Salesman and I'm Not Your Negro. I'm Not Your Negro opened wide this weekend, and Salesman has been expanding. And so let's talk about those a little. I'm Not Your Negro, which LA Film Critics, which I'm a member of, gave Best Doc to this year. I was very proud
of that. Well deserved.
Yeah. It's mainly based on a proposal for a book that Baldwin never finished called Remember This House, where he was going to tell the story of the civil rights movement through the lives of three of its leaders, all of whom were cut down before the age of 40, who were friends of his: Medgar Evers, Martin Luther King Jr., and Malcolm X. And you have footage of Baldwin, you know, giving interviews and speaking to audiences, but then you also have these sections of the book proposal and letters to his agent that Baldwin wrote, being read by Samuel L. Jackson.
Really well.
Really well.
Imitating him, but not doing it badly. I mean, making it work.
Yeah, like
so it doesn't sound like Samuel Jackson, who's so identifiable.
Yeah,
you always know it's him.
At the end, because the first time I saw it, I didn't know it was him. And when I saw it in the credits, I was like, oh, okay. Because he gets the cadences of Baldwin without trying to do
exactly.
the voice.
Exactly. It was perfect.
It's less like he's trying to sound like Baldwin and more like he's trying to sound like not Sam Jackson.
Well, man, that's fair. But you know, when you listen to Baldwin speak, he has a way of phrasing and of pausing. And Jackson really gets that.
And he's such an eloquent, incredibly brilliant man.
Oh yeah,
it's just so impressive how he parsed these. Some of those Dick Cavett shows really killed me.
Yeah, because you get that you get these sort of professorial types who are like, what are the black people so angry about? You know, and him having to sort of walk
explain it.
Yeah, to like a smart guy. You know,
but the other thing that really killed me was both 13th and I'm Not Your Negro look at other American movies that had an influence on how we see things, and of course, Birth of a Nation was one of them, but. What Peck reminds us of are the through Baldwin are these 60s movies that we all loved, you know, like the Defiant ones, you know, with Tony Curtis and Sidney Poitier, you know, chained together, and showed that African Americans didn't respond well to those movies. It was liberal whites in Hollywood and at the Academy, back to your point, who responded to those movies.
Yeah, I remember I had
made them feel good.
I had heard that quote before from Baldwin, but seeing it over that the image of the film with Jackson reading it, the whole notion of that white audiences applaud when Sidney Poitier jumps off that train at the end of The Defiant Ones because it lets white people think that black people don't hate them.
That's
or they
right.
haven't done anything to right. deserve being hated, whereas black audiences were saying, idiot, get back on the train.
Right. Well, it's a film like this, a film like I Am Not Your Negro can be, you know, if you're a black audience can see it and feel, you know, confirmation,
mm-hmm.
you know, we were right. You know,
this is what we've been trying to tell you.
This is what we've been trying to tell you. White people watching this movie should feel, interrogated
mm-hmm.
by this film. Because what it's asking you is, when will you examine this system that you live in? We've talked about this before, where you're in a fish tank and you don't know there's water in it, and the water is institutional racism.
Right.
That helps you, no matter how poor you are, no matter how disenfranchised you are as a white person, and believe me, that's where I come from culturally, them folks. That didn't negate the fact that I was white and people still looked at me before they knew anything about me like a benign, you know, white person. And so what white audiences have to think about, I think, when they see this film is, what are you going to do about this trouble
right.
that's in your head that makes you need an other?
Yeah, to exist. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, and for me personally, I know one of the things that I've really worked on a lot as an adult is when someone tells you about their life experiences, to shut up and listen to them
yeah.
and take it in and yes. try and learn something from it. And a movie like this kind of forces you, because it's doing all the talking, and so it is forcing you to shut up and listen to it and to take into account what is being said. And I want more people to have that experience and to see this movie and listen to it. You know?
And it's the last one of a group of movies that are all related to one another, and there are three of them nominated for the Oscar.
Yeah.
Right.
So you have 13th from Ava DuVernay, which attacks it from one point of view. And then you have the O.J. Made in America, which won at the DGA last night.
Oh, great.
And then you have this one. And they're all coming at it slightly differently, but they're talking about a lot of the same things.
Right.
Yeah. I think they're complementary in a lot
yeah.
of ways, but they never feel redundant. Like, they're all kind of illuminating a different aspect
yeah.
of this topic. And there's, you know, and they are just a drop in the bucket of all the stories and all of the
issues.
They
should all be seen.
Absolutely, yeah. No, all three of these movies I super highly recommend. And I know we've said this before, but like, O.J. Made in America, make the time investment. Those 5 hours will zip by.
It's more like eight.
Or 8 hours. Okay, sorry. Well, it felt like five. No, I don't know. I'm kidding.
There were five episodes.
Five episodes. That's it. I knew it was five something. And then also The Salesman coming out this week from, as you were saying, Oscar Farhadi. It's
every single person who wins an Academy Award needs to get up on that microphone and just say his name three times and then leave. And that's everyone's speech.
Well, the thing is,
I've decreed this.
It might be the winner of the Oscar just because of all this controversy.
Well, if you are an Oscar voter who wants to stick it to the man, this
exactly.
is the easiest route, because this is the nominee who is definitely not coming this year
yeah.
because of what's been going down.
I want it to win, and I like Tony Erdmann better.
But you still want this one to win.
But I still want this one to win. Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah. yeah. And I hope that they figure out who to send up there to accept it. Like, if it does win, we're looking at a
moment.
At a Sachin Littlefeather moment. Like, they're going to send up somebody who's going to, like Meryl Streep, or somebody's going to drop another, you know, dime on.
I want it to be Cher.
Ooh, good one.
In her Moonstruck Academy Award feather headdress outfit. I want her to wear that outfit again. And I want her to get up and talk the way she talks in all of her furious tweets.
Oh yeah,
about Donald Trump. Do you follow Cher on Twitter?
I should.
Oh, she's great.
I'm there. I'm going to do it.
No, she follows Cher on Twitter.
And
one of our great political thinkers.
Oh yeah,
I'm not being sarcastic.
She's smart. I like her.
Go back and find the YouTube clip where she goes on C-SPAN to talk about how she's been visiting during the Bush 2 Gulf War, where she was visiting the military hospitals and how they didn't have enough armor protection on the Humvees and blah, blah, blah. And she's just like going on and on. And the host finally goes, I'm sorry, but is this Cher?
she's like, one of the great underestimated human beings.
Yeah.
By the way, the Kristen Stewart stuff about Donald Trump tweeting about her and Pattinson was hilarious.
That was brilliant. Yeah, her monologue.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. No, it vaguely rang a bell, but yeah.
Another underestimated person.
Oh, well, yeah. No, I've been on her side from you know, back in the Fincher panic room.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
And Jumanji.
Yeah. You're an early adopter then.
No, I saw that for some reason.
I cannot,
as did Jodie Foster
indeed,
and others. Yeah.
I cannot wait to see Personal Shopper.
It's really good.
Oh, good, good, good.
It's excellent. Although it's not really a horror movie. That's not what it's about.
No, nope, that's fine.
It's a good French.
I love Esaias and I love the
it's two more. It's more what you would expect from him.
Perfect.
Which is good.
Excellent. Bring it on. And she managed to get a plug in for it on SNL of all places, so that was funny.
Well, isn't that why she's on?
Exactly.
She's on?
Oh, that was the
technically,
hook.
I guess.
They usually are promoting something.
Yeah. I'm going to promote my new French language film.
No, but we digress.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Salesman.
We do that all the time.
It was in Cannes, and it played well there, mm-hmm. and the actor won.
Yes.
Best actor. But it's not. I thought when I first saw it that it wouldn't translate to our culture that well.
Mm-hmm.
A separation for some reason was utterly understandable.
Right,
And identifiable. You could understand it perfectly. This is a very deep dive into what happens to a man when his wife is assaulted, and it's about that culture.
Yeah, it was interesting to look at this after having seen Elle, and I guess that they showed side by side at Cannes.
Right.
This is it's a husband and wife, and they're both actors in a company who is putting on Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman.
I'll say their names. Shahab Hosseini
mm-hmm.
is the husband
who won Best Actor at Cannes,
and Tarane Alidosti is the wife.
Okay, close enough. I'm sure.
I'm bad at saying the name.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So their apartment building in the opening scene of the film is literally collapsing around them, and so they're forced to move out and get a new place. They worry they may have to move into the theater and live on the sets. And one of their co-stars says, "Oh no, I've got a place." And so he takes them to his apartment building where there's this roof apartment, and there's still all this stuff there that the previous tenant hadn't left. And it turns out they come to realize that the woman who lived there before had a lot of gentleman callers, as you might put it, which of course is a giant scandal for Iran.
They say in the film she lived a wild life.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so there's one.
We don't know. They called their visitors clients.
Right.
In fact.
Yeah. So they're pretty straightforward about it. So there's an evening where the husband's on his way home. The wife thinks he's en route. And so when somebody buzzes the building, she just like opens the door and leaves the door of the apartment open while she's taking a shower. And someone comes in and assaults her. And so then the rest of the film is her not really wanting to talk to the police about it, not wanting to address it, and him trying to track down the person who did it and, you know, putting together the guy left his keys behind. So he's sort of able to kind of piece together that it's the guy, somebody who owned this truck. And,
But his honor is assailed and his sense of well-being. She's handling it one way and he's handling it another.
Yeah, like she clearly wants to, she's trying to drop it and move on and is not entirely successful. Like she wants to immediately start acting again, and then she kind of has a meltdown in the middle of a performance.
Right.
But he is just obsessed with closing this loop and finding the person and making them pay. And so, yeah, it is an interesting look at gender attitudes specifically in this, you know, restrictive society. You know, like the woman who's playing Willie Loman's mistress has a line about like, "Oh, I'm half, you can't send me out of the room, I'm half naked." But of course the actress is wearing like a raincoat and a hat, you know, because it's an Iranian production, you know. And even then they talk about how the censors are going to come take a look at it and maybe make them take three scenes out of it. So, you know, it's the, you know, trying to
so there are a lot
happen.
Of different a lot of little parallel things going on
yeah.
with the woman who is playing essentially a prostitute in the play. And then the constant references to this woman who we never see.
Right.
Who was probably one herself.
Yeah. And they both have children.
And the idea...
The woman we don't see and the actress playing the prostitute both have sons who are prominently featured.
And the idea of what happens to a woman who has been violated. And now how the world in Iran, but not just Iran, the world
yeah.
looks at her.
Right.
I mean, just look at any woman who accuses a rapist in the United States and what happens to her.
Right.
And so, you know, you've got that, and then you've got the idea of the husband and wife's relationship kind of crumbling under the stress of yeah. this in a film that begins with a bulldozer attacking the foundation of their home.
Mm, true. Yes.
This is a very good movie.
Yeah.
It is. He's made many movies. This is a superior veteran filmmaker.
I still need to see A Separation. It's a glaring.
Very connected to A Separation in that it's similarly domestic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Intimate.
I did see. I always forget what this movie's called. The one with Berenice Bejo in it. Is it it's the past or the west or the?
I think it is the past.
The past,
which I
yeah.
did not see.
Didn't love it. I think there was some good stuff in it, but I thought it sort of overplayed its hand dramatically. But no, I think this one's really interesting. And it's funny when Christy Lemire and I were reviewing it on What the Flick, I kind of brought up the question of why Death of a Salesman. Like we were trying to sort of nail down what thematic link there is to the play to this film, and we weren't quite sure, but I had an interesting comment left by one of the viewers who speaks Farsi, and apparently the original title of the film, it's kind of a play on words, because in Farsi, salesman and prostitute are sort of similar, because it's person who sells.
Yes.
And so there's kind of a, you know, that's where that goes. And when I was looking up the poster online, in France, this movie is called The Client,
mm-hmm.
not Salesman. So, you know, it that's where I think they're kind of tying together the whole Willie Loman prostitute angle. But yeah, no, it's a cool movie. And, you know, I still haven't had my Tony Erdman do-over, so I can't compare the two. But
oh, you.
If this one winds up winning the best foreign film, I would be perfectly happy with that.
Oh, you're going. We just haven't had.
I know,
a free three hours, and
you're doing La La Land.
Yes, yes, yes.
The one I thought was going to win was A Man Called Uwe.
Uh huh.
And it would have, if the salesman hadn't become,
really over Tony Erdman. Yet?
Yes, it's not playing that well, Tony Erdman.
With Academy members,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, because it takes.
It's three hours.
It's a very slow burn.
It takes nearly 3 hours to get to that place.
A lot of people don't make it. They're watching it at home,
yeah.
and they don't hang in.
Yeah.
That was my issue. I mean, I did watch the whole thing, but watching it alone on a screen, I found deadly.
It should be in a theater.
That's why I'm going to see it again. Yes, okay.
Oh, you've already
had
this conversation.
I have this conversation like every other day.
I said from the get-go because so many reviews that I read...
Because I love it. I do love this movie.
No, absolutely. So many people that I trust really love this movie, and so many reviews specifically talk about the phenomenon of watching it with an audience. So I'm going to have that experience before I pass final judgment on this movie.
I'm very lucky that so many people he trusts are in agreement with me.
Yeah, if it were just Dave,
otherwise, he'd be like, meh, I don't know. Meh, no. Yeah.
But did you see A Man Called Uwe?
Not yet.
No.
This is delightful,
we have
too.
We have the screener sitting on Mount Unwatched over
yeah,
there.
I want to get caught up on the foreign films. And
how about the shorts?
Oh God! If I have the chance, but I
that's where I'm at. I'm trying to plow through the shorts.
Okay, because I need to. I still need to see Fire on Water.
Fire at Sea.
Fire at Sea,
which
yes.
is wonderful.
That's what I hear. And My Life is a Zucchini. I haven't seen
it's
yet.
It's very
which
good,
I hear
too.
Is good
too.
Yeah.
So are you watching the shorts now, or is that on the list?
Yeah, yeah.
And what's exciting?
Well, the doc shorts. A lot of them are about Syria immigration. There's one doc short called 4.1, which is on the New York Times op-ed site, which is 4.1 miles between this island and the refugees coming. And it's a mini version of Fire at Sea, but it's devastating. because you're right up close with these people and what they're going through and how close they are to death, you know. So, but there's also White Helmets, which is about the people who go in and save the people in bombed buildings in Syria. And that's a Netflix one, which everybody can see.
Oh, okay.
And there's one called Extremis, which is also Netflix, which is a hospital making decisions about how to handle the end of life.
Oh.
And very well done. And that's on Netflix too.
Okay.
And then there's some others you have to sort of get links for and
negotiate
to see.
Well, they're doing the theatrical release of the live of the narratives in the docs or the
Yes, they are.
Right.
So the the other one that I did see is called it's French. It's an interview. It's called I'm blocking that. It's interior something, interiors. But the guy who is applying for an Arab who is applying from Algerian descent who's lived in France his whole life, applying for citizenship in France, and what the guy puts him through, and it's very good.
What I mean, as somebody who's an observer of this stuff and the race. Were there any movies that you sort of held close to your heart that you were kind of saddened that didn't have more Oscar traction?
Oh, well, Jackie, I loved. I would have, I mean, I kind of thought maybe it would only be Natalie Portman and costumes.
But I was thrilled that Score got nominated because I thought that would be weird
That's
for
right.
Academy voters.
Me too,
because
they actually threw out Arrival score, which was so good.
Yeah.
You know, they're very conservative in the music branch. Yeah. They make awful decisions sometimes. Jackie, I would have loved. I was surprised that 20th Century Women didn't do better.
Yeah.
And I have this feeling that there's a sort of male bias in the Academy. You know, the steak eaters dominate the you know, you're going to go with Hacksaw Ridge or Hell or High Water over a movie about women, which is saddening to me.
I'm curious what you thought about Patterson, because I have seen such a divide on that particular movie along gender lines. Not entirely, but in certain circumstances, I've been in rooms where, like, all the men liked it and all the women were kind of...
I really thought it was a sexist movie.
Interesting.
The way that
That's
he handles the woman,
about.
The she's an earth mother. She's a homemaker. She doesn't have much going on in her brain. She's supporting the man. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really the deal.
I don't know. I felt to me like she was really creative, and she was expressing that in a lot of different ways. Whether it was, you know, how she was redecorating the house, how she was, you know, making those cupcakes, how she wanted to like learn how to play the guitar. Like it seemed to me, I felt like she had projects going on, and that she had stuff that wasn't entirely about making his life better. That were her own areas of interest.
I liked the movie very much, and I think it's one of Jarmusch's best, and I think Adam Driver's terrific in a very difficult role to make interesting. The challenge of that movie is all about making this sort of day-to-day, dull-ish life interesting.
Yeah.
And I think Jarmusch really succeeded with those actors in doing that.
Interesting. No, but you're not the first woman I've heard say that about that character. Right? And even Dave, I think, is
We were talking about it a couple weeks ago, and I was like, she leaves the house two times.
It's twice. Not a, it's she she's a throwback
twice.
To another era, I think.
Yeah.
And almost romanticized by him in that way, I think.
You know, she reminded me of Dave. Dave takes
I
care
of
your favorite housewife.
He takes care of me, and you know, he makes food and
delicious cake today.
And yet he is very creative.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot. It means everything to me.
Oh, God. You know, the other thing about I think, sort of the Oscar industrial complex is that it seems like on a year-to-year basis that between, like, you and CPOND and you know, EW and the people that really parse this stuff out, they've gotten really good at predicting stuff. And so what... So we're sort of desperate for the surprises, you know, come as they may. What do you think is going to shock people this year?
Well, what's really fun is momentum shifts.
Sure.
You know, you have that you have the big push right up to the Oscar nominations, and then it can all change.
Right.
You can have Lincoln, you know, not win anything but art direction or best actor.
Right,
you know, you can have 12 nominations or something. And you can have Mad Max, Fury Road, pick up 10 and not win best picture or director. You know, you can have all sorts of things like that. And so this, in this, you know, La La Land is still plugging along. It's fine. But you can have Fences and Hidden Figures doing really well at the box office, surging, and you can have the issue of wanting to make a statement affecting which movies there. Now, Moonlight has 8 nominations.
Right.
Could they decide that's the movie that's going to make a statement?
Maybe.
In the end? Is Denzel Washington going to beat Casey Affleck? Because...
Ooh.
Has he won any one SAG? So the momentum has shifted in that race.
Yeah.
You could have some oddities for those reasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting with La La Land. There's been, you know, there was like the initial enthusiasm and then the backlash. And then like Matt Singer had that great piece. I'm starting the La La Land backlash.
Yeah. You know? It's had many lives.
Right. And then the nominations came out and suddenly it's like, 14. I don't, you know, really won all those Golden Globes.
Who does that movie think it is?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
is it as good as they say? I mean, I have to say inside the industry, people really like the movie.
Mm-hmm.
They like him. I've had directors sort of say, I'm going to look at that opening sequence again to see how he did that. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, but it lost cinematography last night at the ASC. It was won by the guy who did the photography for Lion.
Really?
So,
oh, wow.
Interesting.
That was interesting.
And then Lion guy got first-time director at the DGA as well. So, okay. All
right. So there's some momentum going on in all sorts of places.
Cool. All right. Well, Dave, any...
For me, the Academy Awards are all just, you know, an entertaining show. When I was a kid, it was, you know, it was vital that I watched it when I was a child because I loved movies. And to me, whatever the grown-ups were talking about on the Academy Awards, that was very important to me. I was 9, but I needed to be allowed to see those grown-up movies by any means possible. And I would, you know... I would just wait until I had a chance somehow to do that. And then, you know, the 80s came along and I was a relative grown up and Blue Velvet got nothing. And I was so mad.
Color Purple for me, yes.
But what are the movies this year that you felt were robbed?
Oh, robbed?
Patterson, I mean, at least for Adam Driver's performance,
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, he deserved it.
Yeah, I agree with you about 20th Century Women. I think that, you know, between Annette Bening and Greta Gerwig, I thought both of them were strong contenders.
20th Century Women, I guess, for American films.
The Handmaiden was not Korea's entry.
Correct.
But I think it would have been nice to see it pop up as something like production design.
Or costumes.
Or costume, yeah.
Yeah. I was surprised that Taraji P. Henson was not nominated.
It's a question of that weird category this year.
I would
so
like,
competitive.
I would like Meryl Streep to just say, you know what? Take me out.
She gave that speech.
She gives up a space.
That's what they nominated.
The speech
her for.
Got her nominated.
She's. It doesn't matter what she does anymore. They just nominate her.
Yeah, she's Meryl. And, she's Mount Rushmore, you know.
And I adore her,
but not Florence Foster Jenkins so much.
And so, like, that's irritating.
I would have liked to have seen Your Name get an animated nomination. Did
I
you
didn't
see that
see
film?
That one.
It's really lovely. It kind of had a quickie awards thing, but it's going to open, I think, in March.
I was really glad The Red Turtle got in.
Yes.
I mean, I knew the other ones would make it, but The Red Turtle is special, I think.
Absolutely. No, I totally
2D,
agree.
Beautiful.
So beautiful. I was kind of surprised that Finding Dory didn't get in and that two, like, non-Pixar Disney movies did.
I was rooting for Finding Dory all along, and our Bill Desowitz, the guy who covers animation for us, he kept telling me that wasn't going to happen. And I think it's just a sequel thing.
Interesting.
And quite frankly, there should be 15 nominations for Cemetery of Splendor.
Yeah.
And everybody can go to hell.
I thought you were going to say 15 animated nominations because there's so many good animated movies. No. They're always better than everything else.
That's true. Yeah.
The movies I go to bat for routinely are the movies that people look at me and say, I don't even know what that is. So, like, it's not...
All right, pronounce the director's name fast.
Oh, he's real good at this.
I knew he would be.
A Pichot Bong, we're a Seth Akul.
Jingleheimer Schmidt.
He's my dude.
Yes. It's funny, I was just, you know, you were talking about watching the Oscars as a kid. I had the same experience where it was like, it was this event, even when I didn't know what the movies were, or didn't really see them yet, but I knew the Academy Awards was this sort of spectacle that I was always excited about. We also grew up in the last pre Entertainment Tonight era.
Correct.
Where this stuff wasn't always on television. So yes. Like to see this cavalcade of movie stars showing up, and that they were showing film clips and that they were all wearing tuxedos, like that was a thing. And now, of course, it's just one of a gajillion award shows.
And it's Johnny Carson every year.
Yes. Well, I'm old enough that I remember it was Bob Hope. Still, yeah.
So I love watching it still to this day. I do not enjoy a big watching party with a lot of noise.
No distractions.
I like to be in my pajamas. I make the same thing for dinner every year.
Which is?
A big, giant amount of spaghetti carbonara, so I can have it in a bowl and sit on the couch and eat it while I'm watching these Oscars. Because all I really care about is the outfits and people doing outrageous things in their speeches or just on the red carpet or just in general. Like, I want spectacle happening.
Like the South Park guy in green,
for instance. Like the South Park guys, like...
the Priscilla Queen of the Desert.
Something like that.
American Express dress.
Yeah, that was the best.
That's the kind of thing I'm down for.
I mean, I know this sounds snotty when I say it, but I am much more invested in what the critics groups give awards to.
Well, just because
I feel like we all see more movies than Academy members do.
You certainly do.
You know, and I think a wider swath of films. I think there's a lot of smaller stuff that for Academy members it just doesn't, you know, I'm sure a lot of them never bothered to see, you know, Take Me to the River or Southside with You or even Patterson, you know.
You are correct.
Yeah, you know, every year there's that, you know, there's that sludgy, you know, The Founder kind of stuff that gets pushed.
Luckily, that didn't happen. But, I mean, that movie didn't make it, nor did Gold, one of the worst movies of the year, in my humble opinion. No!
I like Gold.
No! Matthew McConaughey has definitely, what's the word? Skipped the couch? Jumped the couch?
Jumped the shark.
Thank you.
Nuked the fridge.
Has the reconnaissance ended already?
Well, he's already in Trump land now.
You're right.
I think technically the reconnaissance ended when he gave his Oscar speech for Dallas Buyers Club. And
Everything was in his favor working on his side for that movie.
Yes.
And it sent him in the wrong direction afterwards. It almost justified him going crazy with every role or being, you know, zonked out of his brain when he did them.
And those insane Ford Mercury commercials.
And various beards and starving and eating. And right. I mean, give me a stomach on this one.
I guess this year there was not that level of awardsy stuff, like, you know, there was no Book Thief, you know, or Memoirs of a Geisha.
The Founder in the Book Thief category.
Totally.
You know, middlebrow porn.
Absolutely, you know. Yes. That you could just tell, like, it was the For Your Consideration was, like, typed on the script.
Exactly.
You know?
It's almost like a cliche with the Weinsteins now.
True.
Every time I'm on the Fox lot.
Oh, that's right. they have that little book.
You park in the Galaxy lot, and then you walk through the little courtyard area to the screening rooms. And on your right, as you're passing through this one little narrow corridor,
that little glass birdhouse,
there's a little box on a pedestal, and it's for the Book Thief. And you're supposed to put books in it for people to take.
It's like a swap thing where you can
drop.
This makes you laugh.
It's so funny
because the sign still references the Book Thief. Like anyone remembers that movie.
That's the best thing. That and the dozens of stray cats roaming the Fox lot. Those are my two favorite things.
Which
about the Fox lot.
Of the Hollywood studio lots is your favorite?
Well,
not Universal. I think that's probably my least favorite.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
I kind of like the Warner lot. There's something
that's my favorite.
That one's still authentic.
It feels the most sort of old-fashioned, like working sound stages, and you know, the day that I wandered into Stars Hollow, kind of like forever will make the Warner lot like my favorite.
And but the day that I saw Alexis Bledel driving while texting on the Warner lot, that was a great day too.
I love the Fox lot, but when I first came to Hollywood, I think it was the first one I ever saw.
Oh wow!
And they still had the
Hello Dolly
overhead. Yes, it was the subway thing.
Yeah, well, that was the funny thing, because when the first time I moved here in the early 90s, and I've told the story before, I was a temp, and I would temp on all the different lots. So my goal was to like to eat my sandwich on every fake New York street in Los Angeles. The Fox lot, they were shooting NYPD Blue at the time. So the street level and like one story up was all like gritty New York, you know, dark and dank and blah, blah. But then the third story was still Hello Dolly with these like balconies with the flowers and the, you know.
They've got the great murals with Marilyn Monroe. Yes. And everything, and the real sound stages. They never did a makeover. I mean, they have some big fancy office buildings too, but they never, which is where what replaced the overhead railway there. But the Sony lot is the one that I hate, because they've done it at Paramount too, where they've sort of faked it up.
Yeah.
You know, they've made it look like a lot when it isn't. Yeah. When it isn't legitimate.
And Sony, that was the MGM lot.
That's a beautiful lot.
That's genuine Hollywood history, and you're right, it does feel kind of fakey now. Do they sell that weird rainbow thing?
What?
You know when you
I know what you mean.
In front of the Thalberg and the Sony,
it was
like this three-sided rainbow, like this huge arcing rainbow.
Where
you never saw this?
No,
it's in the parking lot, more or less. Yeah,
it's bizarre. I never quite understood what it was there for, like what it was promoting. It was just there, you know.
I don't know, but yeah, the Warner lot is fun to go on. It's also the hardest one to get onto, because they put you through like 3 checkpoints, you know.
That's true.
And it's like trying to go into East Berlin, you know? You're like, I'm just here to see the movie. Yeah.
So, and what's your take on podcasting? I mean, you're a veteran at this,
and
you know, you've got a successful show, and you have very successfully made the transition out of print and into online.
There's an alternative world where I would be in radio. I mean, I did radio in college.
Oh, that's true.
You know, I used to do a show called Jazz Expansions.
Ooh.
Yeah.
With that specific voice.
My show was called Outer Limits.
Oh.
And it was just straight up noise for 3 hours. Yeah.
Punk.
No. This was like a
punk was too melodic for this.
Punk was too like normal. This was like
Japanese noise bands that sound like airplanes landing.
Okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Extremely difficult, like kind of
Did you have a radio name, or were you Ann Thompson?
No, I was Ann Thompson, but I used to do news, you know, and I used to do criticism.
Yeah.
This is in the NYU era, and then but when I was in college, I had a license, and I could do well, you know,
your FCC card,
discs,
yes,
you know, and FCC exactly, and I often sort of regretted not taking that route. It would have been fun to be on radio. But I love doing the podcast with Eric. He's the one who keeps us on track.
Oh, interesting.
You know, I get to just sort of play along with him.
It's weird. You know, it's funny. You and Eric and I were all on a jury at AFI that year, but I don't think I've ever met Eric face to face.
He was long distance, wasn't he? Yeah. No, you should know him. He'll be out for the Oscars. He'll be here.
All right.
He's going to go to the show.
Uh-huh.
And I'll be on the red carpet.
Oh, nice. For whom?
It's IndieWire.
Oh, wow.
Just,
okay.
You know, doing the I like doing the iPhone multitasking, pictures, interviews.
Whoa.
You know, then run into the interview room, type it up, and then do the show and type up the show. No, I love that focus, that intense concentration that's required to, you know, listen to the interviews coming in, listen to the show, you know, keep track of the quotes, you know, and, you know, sometimes I'm right opposite the New York Times people and the Variety people and the which one is Joel Cohen, which one is Ethan Cohen, yeah, that kind of, it's fun, and we're all in it together.
I have never covered the Oscars. I don't know that, I think it would drive me batty, but if you can multitask like that,
well, there's
more
a little
power
headset
to you.
Thing, you know, uh-huh. So you can listen to one channel or another and decide who's important. You
if
know.
I could bring a couch and my pajamas.
And the spaghetti carbonara.
And the spaghetti.
And everybody's maybe in black I, tie, too,
maybe
even
I
in the press room.
The Oscars too.
And then there's the governor's ball, which is really fun.
Oh, cool.
And you go in and you see all the winners coming in, and you can accost them. And
Do people clamor to dress you for this occasion?
Oh, God, no. I wear the same thing every year. No one's looking at me.
I always love watching the red carpet and playing Spot the Publicist. You know, because like the
Fidel Pagodin,
exactly, yeah, like the ones that we know, just looking for them because they're always like wearing black and trying not to be noticed on camera at all. Like everything, they're just sort of like they're like you can see them sort of pushing people in the right direction and then ducking out of the way of the lens.
Except for
you know.
Peggy Siegel, she's hogging the camera.
Definitely, she's planting her feet. But for the most part, you're right. I don't know, it's my Where's Waldo, you know, for the event.
I look forward to when I'm in my pajamas again. My time will come.
It's really great.
That's the luxury.
We will leave you a spot on the couch.
Thank you.
When that time comes. Ann Thompson, people can find you. You are at AK Stanwyck. Explain that, please.
Oh, okay. Ann Thompson's a really common name. Mm-hmm. So back in the era, early on, I had to come up with creative handles
right
on, you know, emails and other things, and I just I have a poster on my wall of Barbara Stanwyck, and my first two initials are AK.
Okay, so you are AK Stanwyck on Twitter. People can follow you on Facebook.
Yes.
And your blog and your podcast are both at IndieWire.com. So thank you for being here. I've been wanting
it was
to
as much
the
fun
show
as I thought it would be.
Oh, yay! And again, reminding everybody to go to patreon.com/linoleumknife. Check out our new benefits for the year to come. New extra podcasts.
New merch.
All kinds of exciting stuff. Yep. So we're thrilled about that. You can, of course, subscribe to this show for free on iTunes and leave us a nice review. It really does help. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. Check out our friends on the internet. You know who they are. You can stream us at Stitcher Radio and TheLounge.com and Podbean and Satchel and CastBox. And if you're on Android, we're apparently on Google Play. And
PodFloop.
we're at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Oh, before I forget, somebody on Twitter asked us today, and I thought this was a question for you.
Yeah.
There's a movie called Wind River that's written and directed by Taylor Sheridan, who wrote Hell or High Water and Sicario, and apparently Weinstein has dropped it. Do you have any idea where?
That's not true, apparently. There was a reported story before Sundance to that effect, but when I spoke to them, they have it back. They fixed it. There was some glitch.
Gotcha.
In
all
the
right
negotiations.
So still Weinstein. Okay, cool. Well, I hope it's good. It's got Elizabeth Olsen and
it's
Jeremy
very
Renner.
Good.
Oh,
it's
you've
very
seen
good.
It.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, he's a good writer and a good director. The only thing, if you saw Sicario, you may remember that Emily Blunt played a sort of clueless FBI agent who didn't know what she was doing.
Right.
That's what Elizabeth Olsen plays in Wind River.
Okay.
I have a slight problem with this. Returning to an underwritten woman.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, you know, baby steps.
Forever. Baby steps forever.
He's not the only one.
Yeah, I know. This is true. Would that he were the exception and not the rule. All right. Ann Thompson, you're awesome. Thank you for being here. Thank you all for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.